Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can send questions and comments to our YouTube stream, so hello and good evening to YouTube, as well as Facebook, so hello and good evening to you on Facebook. It's always a good time to see you all in chat there. You know me, my name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957, in Fairfax, Virginia. And let's see, looking at the scoreboard, we have an interesting next host, which is Jason Richards. How the heck are you?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm doing fantastic.
Jason Richards here. Good. I'm glad you're fantastic. I'm doing well as well.
I'm glad you're
Jason Richards, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Enhance. Next up, we have the one, the only, Robert Johnson. What we had?
Hey, Robert Johnson, Vsauce here. I've been wanting to do that for like a bazillion episodes. Robert Johnson, past master, Waukegan Lodge 78, current sitting secretary at Space Novum 1183. Good to be with you guys.
Awesome as always. And last but not least for tonight, we have our very special guest, Joe Martinez, back again in the flesh. How are you tonight?
Hello. Hi, everybody. Joe Martinez, senior warden of Manassa Lodge, master if I get elected in a few months, and a member of a bunch of other stuff, and super jazzed to be here tonight. Thank you.
Come out and
come on. Who's going to take it over instead? Like,
it's a big shift. It's a big shift in culture. So it's culture wars.
That's never happened at any lodge in Northern Virginia. Okay, before we get into tonight's topic.
Because you have a goatee, isn't it? You just hate facial hair.
Want to thank the patrons who've been supporting the show for a couple of years now. This has been fantastic to keep equipment updated, to make even Joe look good on camera. So if you want to keep Joe Martinez looking pretty, head on over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable and donate to Joe's makeup fund. All right. So let's get into
it. We don't pay for Joe's equipment.
No, it's all on this end. It's the whole like post-processing we have to do.
I'm so confused.
Trust me, it's a lot of magic that happens. A lot of horsepower. A lot
Snapchat.
Of
Snapchat. It's just Snapchat filters.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone who's been to EsoterraCon and seen Joe in person knows it's rough.
Beast mode. Yeah, he looks like the guy at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, he has his face melted or whatever.
Jesus, man, Joe, I'm so glad to be here tonight.
I love you so much, Joe.
It's so beautiful.
So
don't gorgeous. Look at it, Marion. Sorry.
Okay, so tonight's topic, we're going to do a deep dive. This is going to be something we want to do for a while. We haven't done a three-part or four-part series in a long time. And so, we put our heads together and said, what would be a really cool series of episodes of things that we could really nerd out on, really spend some quality time instead of trying to wrap things up into 1 hour? What would it take to stretch things out, give it the due diligence that it requires? And so, we bounced some ideas off of Joe, and Joe Martinez came up with a really fantastic idea, which includes the what are we talking about? We're talking about the rites of separation, or the preliminary rites, right? We talked to one episode about the three phases of initiation. We had Joe on for that, and Joe did an excellent job, but it did seem kind of rushed. So we're going to actually walk through the three phases of rites or initiations or transformation. So in order to get started, let's just do a quick recap. If you haven't seen that episode, Jason's going to get the episode number, and Joe is going to just kind of tell us at a high level, what are these three phases that one goes through when they are going through an initiation?
Sure.
And where do they come from?
Exactly right. Well, that's where I was going to start. So let's talk about where these three phases were codified. And they basically were put in writing and organized by a French, I think he was an ethnographer and then later became a folklorist named Arnold Van Gennep. And so if you Google Van Gennep's Rites of Passage, you're going to find tons of papers, both scholarly and non-scholarly, about who Van Gennep was and basically studied cultures, both past and modern, all over the world, and categorized rites of passage into three major categories or three things that happen during any rite of passage. And we're definitely going
to episode 335.
What 335. Jason said.
And waiting for you to take a breath. And I kept waiting.
I'm from New York, man. I just talk a lot, but, so Van Gennep, and then, another, a religious scholar named Mirceau Eliade, he touched on it even further and wrote some fantastic books on initiation about it, which I think we've spoken about on the show. But basically broke down initiation into three separate phases. And the first one is the, like John said, the preliminal phase or the separation phase. And then the liminal phase or sitting on the threshold itself. And then the post-liminal phase or the reintegration. So today we're going to talk about that very first phase, and there's actually a lot packed into these three phases themselves. So there you go.
Excellent. Good recap. So we're going to really focus on that first section, which is also in the English term, you know, instead of preliminal, just separation, where one has to ritualistically separate or leave their old before they can join the new. So we're talking about what happens before the thing, right? Before the event. So one way to help put my ideas together is limen is the Latin word for threshold, I believe, or door. And so if we're talking preliminal, then that is what happens before the door, right? Then the actual crossing of a threshold is the event, the transformation, the ritual, the magic, and then post-liminal is what happens as a result of that transformation. So let's talk about what does it mean to have a pre-liminal separation? So I'm going to look at one definition, and we'll kind of unpack that a bit. Preliminal rites or rites of separation is the stage of initiation which involves a metaphorical death as the initiate is forced to leave something behind. And by breaking with previous practices, routines, cultures, etc., what does that mean to you? Just on the face value of that.
So when you look at an initiatory rite, or a rite of passage, we like to see change as gradual. And, Kaizen, you're 1% better every day. That doesn't work for mystery schools.
Say more about that. Why not?
Because going from crossing the threshold from the profane world to the world of hidden knowledge is a complete and utter abject transformative experience. And to me, there's no way to just kind of baby step through. And that's why the separation is so incredibly important, because in mystery schools, especially, in any really initiatory rite, it is meant to be a complete life-changing experience. You can even see this in religions. There are, camps and experiences in Christianity where you go away to a Bible study camp or retreat or something and have, an incredibly profound spiritual experience that you have and then reintegrate, back with your world and your family. But it's very much a similar thing for an initiatory rite.
Yeah, we'll dig into lots of different analogous experiences and examples of those. Robert, is this rite of separation important? Like, what is it? what does it do for someone who is going through some sort of rite of passage?
I think it really depends on the ceremony or what have you that it is going to happen. I mean, these rites of passages are, you know, in our case, we're talking about Freemasonry in particular, and maybe we branch out into talking about, you know, other occult orders or, and then, you know, showing this analogous thing that we do with religious rites. But I think the reason it's important is it's a multifaceted approach, really, but certainly one of them is a willingness, like a showing of a willingness to do something different. What's your metaphorical skin in the game? If you look at, everybody thinks like, you have to give up a thing in order to, is it a, you know, a purification ritual, or maybe it's to change you psychologically to show that you have what it takes, you know, to do this thing. You know, I'm thinking particularly you know, there are murder cults, right, that existed in medieval ages where you were required to, like, take a life first, right? This was a separation from the social contract. Perhaps, you know, in Masonry, we have exactly, like getting jumped in, yep, or whatever the case is, right? So you're being separated. You're being taken out of the normal range of, like, I keep using the term social contract, but I don't want you to think I'm quoting, you know, the work of certain authors who've talked about social contracts, but like the normal mold of what society demands of its inhabitants. There needs to be something that separates you from the rest, and that's a large case. And then once you've kind of made maybe a step towards something like an initiatory or a school of wisdom, as we might call it, to quote, you know, what Joseph Wages has done in his book. But these schools of wisdom, once you're kind of separated yourself, once to get into that space, now you have to take another step, right? And what is that step going to be? I think I've heard many times people talk about the different things that were required of people that went into a lot of the different Grecian schools, fasting and certain diets. And even today, certain diets are still demanded of many different religious groups. In fact, if you are a member of the Rosicrucian Fellowship, which is a Max Heindel's group, that is still very much like you have to give up meat. You know, you can't smoke. There's no, you know, so there are things you give up, and those things can be material. They can be mental things. They can, I mean, it varies depending on the rite, and what exactly those things are come together in a symbolic way that means something, yeah, to that rite.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just a separation, like I'm going out of town. You know what I mean? It can be other types of separation. Jason?
It's a shock to the system that prepares you for that transformational change.
One thing that came to mind, too, in prepping for the show is immediately thought of, you know, the monomyth, right? Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, which we've talked about in the context of Freemasonry before, that, you know, it is the world's oldest storytelling character arc, and yet it is part of this as well, where the hero has to leave town, has to leave his comfortable surroundings so that he can be transformed, right? So it's built right in to this tale that's, you know, millennia years old. So let's go now to specific examples of types of, you know, let's start with non-Masonic examples of separation rites. So I'm just, you know, off the top of my head, we can bounce around and jump in, but you know, let's just say engagement, like you're going to betroth your partner by the mere fact of having this symbol of commitment of an engagement ring. You do the whole proposal, which is a rite in itself. And you, by the way, if you haven't put your mind in that frame yet, like blowing out birthday candles is a ritual, is a rite. It's a transformation. You know, all these like things we take for granted every day. The process of proposing and engaging is not only a rite of passage, but it's also the separation, because now, usually the female has an outward sign of separation from the dating pool. Right? She is no longer on the market and has a ring to show for that. But it's not the act of marriage.
And the male, if you're like my wife, who got me an engagement ring as well, because
she wanted to make sure
I was off the market.
All right,
like, I don't think you have to worry. Rock.
But,
yeah.
But see, that is one example, because it's not quite marriage yet. That would be the actual liminal phase. But the preliminal phase is that transition of separation. Joe, do you have another example?
Yeah, I think the one that comes to mind for me, definitely when it comes to non-Masonic examples, as a modern rite of passage that's existed for thousands of years and is still done the same way, I would say is like a bar or a bat mitzvah. For our Jewish friends, that is one of the most defined rites of passage, which both Eliade and Van Gennep touch on. It's basically going from youthhood to adulthood, right? And it's for bars and bat mitzvahs. It is such an outward sign that I'm now an adult, at least in my faith, you know, and it touches on all three different categories, you know, in a rite of passage. But, you know, and again, having grown up in New York, I've been to quite a few. You don't think about it when you're 13. You know, unless you're just an enlightened soul. But I mean, it really is supposed to be a really defined time where you break that, I think, social order was what RJ was talking about before, where your old social order and you enter a new one. And Eliade goes on, if you've not read his book, he goes on to how serious that is, especially in cultures that are still tribal, things like that. You know, you can't go back to your old life. You have to leave that old life behind and never return to it. And it changes your relationship with your siblings, with your parents, with your, you know, the people in your tribe or group or family. So, but yeah, for me, I think bar and bat mitzvah would be the most striking.
Right. And even that is even that has three steps within itself. Right. But you could say the preparation of, you know, learning the parts of the Torah and all that, that will be, that would be ready for that. Jason, do you have an example of a separation rite?
Oh, sure. Your child going off to kindergarten. If we want to take things literally and talking about the actual, you know, up until kindergarten to an extent, you know, not counting daycare and things like that, the child is learning from his or her parents. And so going and stepping into kindergarten and beginning, you know, the child's official education, you know, is a turning point where the child must separate, at least for a time, from his family and his parents to receive a transformative, you know, educational experience from those outside of his family, his or her family.
Yeah, and really any institution of higher learning, right, separating from the local tribe of the family unit to school, public school, college, right? That, so just leaving the house. You're 18, get out of the house. Like, that is a physical rite of separation.
Yes.
Good one. RJ, do you have another example of a separation rite?
Well, I mean, instantly I was thinking about, right, going off to college. But I mean, that's really is similar to exactly what Jason was alluding to. I mean, these things are, you know, frequently all over the place. I mean, what if look at a more modern one, right? Like maybe when you turn 21, you know, now you have a whole new set of laws that pertain to you. You have to leave behind, you know, or when you turn 18, a childhood innocence, new set of laws you have to abide by. There are all kinds of things that we do all the time in a practical and very real way in life that are all, you know, kind of these separation type, you know, events.
Yep. I'll also add one thing that I found fascinating in research for this is, again, I tried to like mentally separate these things in this frame, this three-phase framework, right? So even, you know, if you look at one rite of passage, then can you break that down into a before, during, and after? One thing I found interesting is a lot of them throughout cultures and tribes and everything include like cutting of something, which is fascinating because you could have the shaving of one's head before you join a monastery, or circumcision for the majority of the population, right? You especially, like we talked about our Jewish friends, that is a part of you're cutting off literally from the old world into a new commitment. And even interesting,
thinking about enlisting in the military.
Yeah, there you go. You are separating your clothes, separating your hairstyle, and you are now
separating your freedom. Yes,
yes. And the interesting thing too is that also what goes with that is it could be the opposite of putting something on, because putting something on separates you from your previous past. So even a newborn baby who has been circumcised also will be putting clothes on for the very first time. So their previous state was warm and in the womb and happy, and now they're actually leaving that world behind and is now joining, the clothed world, per se. So that these are all interesting, ways to think about. It's an act. The act itself of cutting hair, circumcision, putting clothes on is that rite of passage, but it's transitory. Right? It's meant to prepare you for the next step. Joe, you're going to say something?
No, I was just going to touch on the whole joining the military thing. Absolutely, is has all three of those phases. I mean, as soon as someone said circumcision, I just thought about those poor adults in Genesis that, weren't babies and didn't have a choice in the matter, so.
Yeah, was, we all joined this fun club, guys.
Profound experience for them, and they didn't have a choice.
Right.
I think that, all of
them. Or the guys who convinced their entire village to do it.
I just had this image of, like, Robin Hood men in tights. What's a moil?
That's it. We get the tip. The ladies love it.
I think
good old Mel Brooks.
I forgot. I already got one.
Oh, I'll take two.
Question.
Bunch of nerds. let's see, another one that came to mind. Divorce, actually. So we talked about marriage, then the act of separation. We literally call it separation, right? Where people separate to prepare themselves for the act of divorce. Of course, it's not pretty and it's painful and all that, but it is still a rite of passage. Before, you just don't one day just say, sign the paper and you're done. It can be done. Not the best way to do it, but there's usually a phase before.
It's very difficult to do these days, though. There's a lot involved in it.
Yeah. And so there is a physical act of separation that we tend to do before divorce.
You know what's interesting? I want to touch on something that you said, right? Because you mentioned this idea of being painful. So number one, this is a largely real deal physical thing, real practical world stuff. Now, the pain that's associated with this kind of separation, or maybe you're in that camp where this is a liberating move and you're ecstatic about it. But let's go for the sake of saying that this is a painful thing. If we can touch on this later, if within the context of a ceremony or ritual, is that separation somehow done properly when one feels this type of pain? In other words, the act of separation should be so significant you have a visceral response to it, or not?
I would say yeah, and maybe not. Maybe take it out of the pain context to your point, but maybe it should be visceral and jarring. It at least should be memorable, especially when we talk about a lot of the manhood rites, and we're stepping outside the conversation of just Freemasonry in general, but, those rites of, I didn't grow up in a tribal culture where, I suddenly became a man and I couldn't treat my mom and my brothers and sisters the same way. But for them, it has to be a jarring experience because that part of you that you grew up with, that you know so well, just died right there, you know, and you can never have that person back again. So I would imagine that, to your point, if done well, it should be at least a jarring experience. Hopefully not too painful unless you're joining a group that makes you get circumcised, but, you know.
But I mean, what's the point? What's the point of having a separation phase in the first place? And that is to remove yourself from the before. You can't transform if there is no before, right? Because then you're exactly the same. So you have to get away from, and so whether you call it your comfort level, right? You know, people say, oh, well, you know, I have to rise to my level of leadership, or rise to my level of competence, right? At work, right? Where sometimes you may be put in a position that you are not ready for, right? And you have to like say, oh, crap, like, I don't know if I'm qualified for this. And so you have to rise that level of competence because you are out of your comfort zone, as they say, and that makes you a better person if you, you know, persist and come through on the other side.
I mean, Isaac Newton agrees with you. I mean, you know, for to move forward in life, you got to leave something behind, and you know, that's a real physical law. You know, so I don't think he was just talking about gravity and stuff.
Got to drop an apple. Yep. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Any other examples of separation rituals to prepare for any other modern day equivalents or historical equivalents?
I think one thing that was probably is, I mean, a lot of occult minded esoteric people, or even anybody who's just experimented with these types of things, for instance, you maybe want to partake in certain recreational substances like ayahuasca or a DMT, like a trip like that. And if you do a tribal ritual, many times there's a preparatory, right? Because this is going to be a spiritual experience. So there's a separation from, you know, I talked about vegetarianism earlier, separation from like basically any and all types of animal product and foods before you do something like that. And so this is just another, like a modern example of maybe a more ritualistic experience that people have done, whether you know Texas or you're going down to South America and Peru, or you know you find yourself in Florida or whatever. This is a very real, more of a spiritual initiatic type experience where there is a separation example for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like pancakes and green beans.
Yes. You just killed Joe. Speaking of Joe, you know, one last one that I thought of that's just interesting is as we get close to the Masonic context, when you become master elect, but you're not installed yet, you're just elected, there is a you are now separated from the tribe of the other officers and of the lodge, but you are not yet master of the lodge until you have your installation ceremony, which is the actual liminal phase. So that's one way to think about it.
Yeah, mine are 12 hours apart, so I won't have too much time to think about it. So
pack a lot into those 12 hours. All right, Joe. so lead us into some more contemplative questions based off of these examples.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the first questions, and knowing that this is an open forum, we can be generic with our answers, but what singular part or parts, if there's more than one, of your own Masonic ritual experience made up that separation phase for you? And I think we're going to get different answers depending on who answers. But and I'll ask Jason first.
So the preparation room, where you are taken into a room with, you know, essentially one other person, the conductor, and you have to prepare yourself. You're now no longer BSing with the members of the lodge. Things have started to get real. The lodge members are all off doing their own thing, and you are now, for all intents and purposes, alone. And that to me represents the first part of the separation that continues until a certain part of the degree when you are fully reintegrated into the Brotherhood.
Great. Robert, what say you?
And you can see clearly the Brotherhood for what it is the first time.
You know, I think for me, it was having to leave behind certain things, like that you cannot, you know, bring into the lodge. Like that was weird to me. And then also having to like wear different clothes into the lodge room. That was what I was, you know, probably the thing that felt most like separation to me. Although also I would say in a bad practice, I think the separation often begins much earlier for other people who might come into a Masonic lodge. And that's when they have to sit all by themselves in the dining room because nobody sits with them. Don't be those guys. yeah, I think that's probably when it was for me. The definitely leaving behind certain effects that I brought with me.
Wow, thank you. Mr. John.
Yeah, let's just say there was some sort of chamber for one to reflect in. That could be a good unit, a good phase of separation. But we won't get into that here because that doesn't happen in Masonry. So some other examples that go into a little bit more detail, too, are... I try to think a little bit more creatively. Separation of the senses, where as part of a good ritual experience in Freemasonry, you may have things like incense. You may not be able to see everything that's going on at all times. You may have conductors that you don't know that are taking you around to places you've never been before. All of those are separating you from your comfort level, right? If you come in all happy and, hey guys, ready for the show, and then you may not have all of your senses at your full capacity in order to experience this eventual, if you make it through, liminal transformation. And so I don't think we really go into that enough about how important that is. One of my other like mentors was really telling me about, like, you know, when you think about like how some people meditate and they use incense to help put them in the spirit, and the incense is not to give them something to smell, it's to mask everything out, right? It's to have a common smell. That just blew my mind. That wasn't what I was expecting, because, you know, like, incense does have a smell, but it's not there to be the thing to focus on. It's to be the thing that removes everything else. And that just blew my mind, because that the act of burning incense is to separate all of the other senses that we've had.
Oh, that worked.
You could do that too.
That's the right word. Yeah. Excuse me. No, you actually touched upon something super interesting that I just wanted to pull the thread on a little bit. When you talked about the maybe figurative separating yourself from your senses as you go through a Masonic initiation, that really touches on really the four different aspects of what Masonic initiation is, right? You have your physical, you know, wearing the pajamas and, you know, putting a blindfold on. And then you have your emotional, the feelings that you feel, a whole range of emotions. Then you get into your mental, you know, what are you processing as you're doing all of this? And then finally, the spiritual, which you may not get on your very first time behind that door, but, you know, it may come to you at some point. But there's all those different aspects of initiation, specifically Masonic initiation, that touch on those different aspects of Masonry, that they each have their own little rite of passage, if you really want to pull that thread and tear that sweater apart. So So fantastic. The next question that we had was, we'll save that other one for the end, but what to you is the most important aspect of separating yourself from your former existence in the context of initiation? What's one piece that you take away from it that you find the most important? And we'll start with John, since he likes to talk.
Yes, not as much as you, but pretty darn close.
We know you love to talk.
That's true.
Keep talking.
One thing I found interesting in design is that American homes are usually set back from the street. If you look at the average American home, it has a driveway, a path, a front yard, whereas a lot of British flats do not. They are right up to the curb, and yet, design-wise, they actually have long hallways in British flats to get into the living space. And the reason is that as you pass through a threshold, you need some sort of mental space to prepare for what's on the other side. And I found that fascinating from a design perspective, that there's not a lot of real estate for front yards in especially urban Britain. But the fact that when you are you're deliberately going through a rite of passage or a ritualistic transformation, you need some space between the profane world and the arena, wherever that is, whatever enclosure that rite of passage is in. So you need some sort of space in between. You need that front yard that you can gather your thoughts, pull yourself together, contemplate on what's to come, and leave the old world behind as you do that. So I think that's what I think I get out the most of having this deliberate set aside of separation.
Great. Robert, what's your most important aspect?
I think for me, what I kind of envision happening, right? Like, we have a set of rituals that are allegorical to, aid us in what we're trying to do. And I think the act of separation for me is really symbolic, at least in my mind. And it's like it's a first step. It's a first logical step also. Like, it's not just this idea that somebody threw up in a book, like, hey, there's these three phases. It literally is, when you really look at it, the first step. And for me, that represents this willingness. So it's a willingness. It's like an admission that says, hey, this is what I am. That's what I want to be. In order to do that, I have to, pull the curtain. I got to cut the cord. I got to take a step. I have to be willing to do, this next thing. And so whatever that act needs to be, taking part in it, for me, again, is first and foremost, it's that willingness to change, and represents that just first step for me.
Awesome. Thank you. Jason, what about you?
For me, the most important piece of separation is that it opens your mind and your body to a transformative experience. I see initiation as a tidal wave and a catastrophic flood that comes and sweeps away the old and leaves nothing but the new. And in order to prepare for that, you can't have those ties back into the old. You must separate in order to be able to accept the new. And so for me, separation is crucial to a transformative experience.
Great. No, fantastic. I think that what Robert said was pretty much exactly what I was going to say. But and I think, John, you alluded to this a little earlier, where with the baby in the womb thing, Now, that baby doesn't have a choice. He's coming out when the doctor says it's time for him to come out. But for everybody else, it's a willful act of change, right? If you're joining the military or you're going to a mystery school type of initiation, they're all willful acts of change, right? So I think for me, that first most important aspect of separation is making that overt choice in your mind to change. You don't know what you're going to change into or what the hell is going on, or what it's going to be like, unless you read too many things on the internet. But it's that willful overt act of change that begins that separation aspect for everybody, except for babies. But ooh, this is a good question. So in your opinions, is separation or segregation or preliminal rights, are they a one-time event during initiation, or can they occur at different points or multiple points within that journey, that hero's journey? And we'll start with Captain Talks a Lot.
I think he means me.
Well, okay then. I guess I'll... No.
No, please. Take that title. I'll gladly hand you that title.
So, I think it's all about intensity. I like to draw a line between initiation and sanctification. So, I talk about the separation being necessary to kick off that deeply transformational experience of initiation. But, you know, we're humans, and so we're not completely changed beings. We still have ties to the old, despite the separation. And so everything thereafter from initiation kind of wipes the slate clean, and you begin through a process of sanctification to mold yourself into that better person or that better man in the sense of Freemasonry, or that more enlightened individual. And so I think throughout that sanctification process, you will have epiphanies and you will have, mini transformational experiences. So I think that it is something that can occur multiple times on the road to self-betterment and self-improvement. But I think the biggest one is that initial cut from everything you know and in with the new.
Well, thank you. Robert,
you're welcome. Say you.
It's a, at first, you just want to say, totally agree with Jason. I think he hit, this is exactly my vein of thought. But then I also am thinking about, if I were to say no, like what if I say that transformation doesn't continue to change, and what does that system even look like? Like for instance, if you join let's go with a negative here, like a cult, a literal cult, right? Like they are giving you the doctrine. This is it. And that is it. You are now this thing, and that's the end of it, right? Like it's almost a singular change. It's not something like Freemasonry, for example, a system of the old allegory thing, right? Morality veiled in allegory, illustrated by symbols. This is a system of progressive lessons that continue to it. I mean, by nature, Freemasonry. This is what this show is about, right? Freemasonry is by nature this thing that is supposed to deliver a series of changes, guided series of changes.
No,
right?
Like, I got my Master Mason degree, I was done, right?
Yeah, that's right, John. Never come back to Lodge again. Your Lodge will thank you.
We are making assumptions here.
He doesn't.
We're making assumptions here on the level of activeness of the participant. And
right,
so,
and I don't necessarily. This was something Brother Ken wrote about. I saw in one of his blog posts on the Midnight Freemasons, and in a subsequent conversation, he said something to the effect of, "Let's not assume active in the lodge means active in Masonry, right? Because if you're active in Masonry, this means that you're actively applying the principles of Freemasonry to better your life, to lead to these continual systematic changes to make you better." And I guess on the surface, like if you are just one of these guys who goes, I'm going to go to Lodge, and that means I agree, I'm making these changes. The only way that's happening to you is when you just can't stop signing up petitions and receiving additional degrees. But again, you have got to, if those degrees that you're seeing are continual things that make you give epiphanies, fine. But, you know, dialing it back, I totally agree with Jason.
That was a long agreement there. So, hey, Mr. John.
I concur, and let me tell you why.
I disagree.
Reginald, I disagree.
Yes, drive-by arguments.
Arguments.
Yes. Another nerd reference. Okay, so I've been struggling.
An argument isn't just contradiction.
Yes, it is.
No, it is. Can be.
I've been struggling with this because, like, I guess maybe it is depending on the level, right? You can have the macro transformation and then you can have micro transformations. Because, again, I've said it before. Jason threw out the magic Kaizen word. Like, I believe you can always be 1% better than you were today than you were yesterday. And the way you do that is through a series of reset buttons, right? And one way that a lot of this theological debate has come up about what is the interpretation of, say, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17, which says, pray without ceasing. So is that just like you just sit there all day and just pray the same prayer to God? And like, you're like, God's like, okay, I heard you the first 700 times, right? Like, what are you trying to get to? And so is it the act of, can you have multiple transformations? And you could say that it's one big transformation, or that, and this is something I try to do, is try to make sure that as I set up my rituals, my personal daily rituals of prayer, of centering, of meditation, that kind of stuff, that happens with intent, right? That I'm actually performing kind of a microcosm of those three phases of initiation, but I'm doing it at a smaller scale to prep me and to remind me of what I've already committed to in a higher transformation. So kind of as above, so below. See what I did there?
So 500 hermeticism points to John Ruark today for hitting all the buzzwords. But you actually touched on something super interesting. And my initial answer was going to be, I think in each of the three craft degrees, you have individual separation, threshold, and reintegration in all three of the degrees.
That is true.
But I know it is because I said it. But I think Robert actually touched on something which you know, can spur argument. But to Jason's point, to Robert, how many people go through Masonic initiation with the sense in their mind that they're actually going through an initiatic rite of passage, right? I would say probably not the majority, you know, and I'm not poo-pooing Masons who don't. I'm just stating the fact that people come to Freemasonry for all different reasons, and they don't come for the same reasons that I do or John did or Jason does. How many of them literally look at it as okay, I got to check the box and do this and do that, and then boom, all the magic comes and I'm a master mason. And then, you know, I can sit on the sidelines and complain at people. So I don't think that number's, you know, on the positive side of on the percentage scale, but maybe things would be a little bit different if they did, you know, or maybe there were some better preparation on the front end or guarding of the West Gate. But yeah, that's a fantastic point that you made. And then my favorite question, and we're going to get more hermeticism points out of Ruark, is which part of the separation phase did you find most meaningful? And going back to those four aspects of Masonry in general, we have the physical aspects, and we talked about those, you know, the physical separation, the pajamas, the taking things off, the mental, the preparation, maybe a period of reflection, as John alluded to, which, you know, totally does not get done enough, reflecting on things before they happen. The emotional part of it. You know, you're separating self from preconceived emotional states until you get up to that door or that lemon. And then finally, the spiritual separation. What does it mean for your old spiritual life versus your new spiritual life? Because at least for me, Freemasonry definitely has changed my outlook on my spiritual life without changing my faith per se. So I'm going to ask Hermes Trismegistus over here to go first. That's you.
I hate you so much, Joe. This is going to be a long two more episodes. Let's see. You know, which is the most meaningful? It's hard to say because, again, there's aspects of all four of those. If I had to choose one, probably as I was going through the degrees, it would be the mental state, right? Because I can look back and see the degree lots of times and learn something new and apply that in a spiritual context. But as I was going through it, it was the mental state of the unknown, going into this unknown, crossing the chasm, going through the veil, whatever allegory you want to or metaphor you want to use. So it was the mental part of separation that I am doing something I have never done before. And I know it's weird and I know it's different and I know it's unorthodox because, you know, let's call for what it is. Freemasonry is very anachronistic in today's society. As a gentleman's club with these strange rituals. And so mentally, I think that was the most meaningful transformation, of the separation, right? Was what am I getting into? Like there's no going back. And at some points, you know, you're like, is it too late for me to bail? can I leave now? And that's on purpose. That whole point of the ritual is to get you in a frame of mind. So to me, it was the mental.
Awesome. Thank you. Robert, what about you?
It's a bit like John's. You know, there's this idea that it's a roller coaster. It's taken off from the dock. You're on your way up. And I kept asking, like, is it too late to just get dressed and leave without saying anything to anybody? This old Tyler's not going to know anything if I just leave. You know, they're gonna be like, oh, I guess he took off. All right, guys, guess we get to eat the green beans early. This whole thing, like it, like the guys who put on my degree, I know some of them care deeply, but the vast majority of them, this is going through the motions. And do they even know that what they're doing in the prescribed way has this effect?
Like,
are they cognizant effect. Enough to know what they're doing? And if the answer is no, because they could have done better. Like, I wasn't shaken to the core, right? But in my opinion, like, I think it should have been. But I kept thinking about, you know, when I told my uncle, I was like, yeah, I'm going to join the Masons. He was like, dude, that's a cult. He's like, dude, they're gonna, you know, paddle your bare butt, you know, or something like that. And it's like, okay, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Not that jurisdiction. Sure. Yeah, really, the mental is where it was at. You know, that's where I was living, and in particular, because as John, I think you noted earlier, you talked about, you know, limiting the senses. And so from the get-go, in the prep chamber, the room where I was changing my clothes, you know, I was going through this, do I really want to do this? This is weird. I kept replaying these conversations I had with my family because I'm very open about everything. And nobody was like, yeah, that's great. Go for it. Nobody was like that. Everyone was like, oh, you know, it's kind of weird. So it was playing out in my head. And it was a F it moment, right? I'm doing it. And then you even get more in your head, the more your senses are limited by design. You know, until I took my first step forward into the lodge, you know, and I felt like cushy carpet, you know, from the lodge, you know, or whatever under my feet. And I was like, okay, I think this is going to be okay. And this is also, you know, 2008. There are laws and police officers and I'm going to be okay. you're right. At the very least, I can make a police report after this is all over.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you, sir. Jason, which part's most meaningful to you?
For me, it's stepping into the unknown. So I'll mirror John's comment with that. For me, I'm someone who really likes structure, and John is gesticulating wildly over there. Someone check on him. He might be having
a seizure. I gave myself a high five for that answer.
Oh, okay. So for me, I like structure, and I like knowing what I'm getting into. And so I liken this to back when I got married almost 12 years ago at this point in time. It was day of, I was all set, ready to go, super excited. About 10 minutes before the ceremony, I just got that bowling ball in my stomach. And it was very much the same thing with Freemasonry. Super, super, super excited. 10 minutes before things are about to get real, I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know how this will change me. And I don't know what things will be after this. And so the most meaningful part of the separation to me is taking that step of faith, and putting faith in yourself and in your brothers and in the folks who are going along on that initiatic journey with you. And realizing that you must step into the unknown in order to grow. And so that's the most profound thing that gets me every time I go through a rite of passage, whether it's, in my day to day with a new job or an actual initiatic mystery school like Freemasonry.
How about you, Joe?
Well, I think for me, I had a little bit different of an experience because I was completely alone when I decided to join the craft. It was just my wife and I. We had moved away from home. I was in the Army. We had no family around us to bounce things off of. I had nobody to talk to about Freemasonry. I mean, it was a total leap in the dark. But the one thing that the lodge that I joined did, which I found super interesting, and I think changes the way I'm going to answer this question, is they gave me a copy when I first knocked on the door. I knew nobody there. And they gave me the talk, and they told me what Freemasonry was, at least to them. They handed me a copy of Claudie's On the Threshold, which, if you've never seen it, it's a book you give to people who are interested in Freemasonry that was written by Carl Claudie. He wrote those three blue books that are absolutely phenomenal. And I read that. I took that book home and I read it. And it gave me such a feeling of spirituality to Freemasonry that I didn't know existed. And I read that book probably. It's a little pamphlet. I think I have it on the back shelf behind a skull somewhere. But it's 10 or 12 pages long. It's a little tiny pamphlet. And by the time I got reading it, I was so enamored with the fact that I was going to go through this really interesting spiritual process. So that's what I took with me when I went to my entered apprentice degree. And ritual aside, whether the ritual was done well or not, I kept that spiritual aspect with me. I'm like, what insights am I going to get into my own spirituality by going through this process? And I didn't have the answers by the time I went through all three degrees. I still don't have the answers today, right? But I think that was the part, more so than, putting on the pajamas and the other aspects of it. But what was I going to gain or lose spiritual wise as I went through this process? And, it went with me through until today.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's go to final thoughts then in the last minute or so of the show. So, Jason, final thoughts.
So, a separation is a critical piece of initiation, especially if you approach an initiatic experience or a rite of passage with an eye to the transformational potential it has to impact your life. And so loosening your bond with who you are before initiation enables you to more readily absorb and more readily, you know, pass through the threshold into the next stages of initiation. And so separation is very much a key piece of that. And it's uncomfortable. And in a lot of ways it's meant to be, because newness is, you know, while it's also exciting, it's the unknown is very uncomfortable, and it's critical to your own personal growth. And it doesn't have to be initiation into a mystery school. It can be a new job, you know, a new relationship, you know, any number of things that mark a new chapter in our life's history. That's an initiatic, right? And it's a change that has a sweeping impact on us from, you know, from there on out. And so that's all I've got to say about that.
Thanks, Forrest. Over to Robert. Final thoughts.
I think a lot of this is just a necessary step. In particular, when you think about things like the mind before matter universe type mindset, it becomes necessary at times to hold on to something, to have a talisman, to you know, give a sign, right, that this means something, that this is giving me the power to do something, whether that is belief in the prayer, belief in the sign of doing something. And in this way, a physical act of separation is a way that helps condition the mind in the current state that we all live in, which is a material world, that signals to the mental a very real concept of separation, a very real aspect of being able to start something anew, to get your mind to believe through a physical act that something is really happening. And that is going to be this change. And so that separation is so vital to any undertaking, you know, in transformative art or whatever you want to call it, because it helps manifest the very real change. So the physical, right? Like how many times you say, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, right? But then the thing is, to believe it is to see it. It's like this idea of seeing is believing. You need to physically do the thing that relates to the mental process of separation, to, you know, aid in the transformation. It makes it real for us because we live in this material world. So I think it's really important in that way. If you like these kinds of podcasts, please check out Whence Came You, Sunday nights, 9:30. And also keep your eye out, your ears out, your thumbs scrolling. Look for The Initiation of Plato, which is going to be coming to a live dramatized read. Got a few great people you already know who are going to be cast members. And, you know, we don't have a date just yet, but we're setting up our first rehearsal meetings very soon. So keep an eye out. It's going to be awesome. Thanks.
Awesome. Let's head over to Joseph.
Hello, I'm Joe, Pisces, and an esotericist. Just want to say thank you for having me tonight. This was a fantastic conversation. I can't wait to unpack the other two phases.
We'll bring you back next week, too. How about that?
Oh, thank you. But yeah, always a blast to be here. Absolutely love you, brothers. So for me, the separation phase, as is all three of you alluded to, it's not just part of the Masonic initiation, you know, when you do it with an earnest heart. I think it's something that can be modeled in all aspects of our life. And it's really just a different way to describe how we learn, how we internalize things, and how we change them. I mean, it's no different than teaching a baby how to do something. First, you model it for them through ritual for us, and then you do it after being modeled, then you replicate it, then you internalize it, and then you do it on your own. And I think that is just a simpler way to break down these different rites of passage. But the first most important one has to be separating yourself from something that you want to leave behind, and only when you leave something behind do you have room for something new. So can't wait to unpack the rest of these. And again, thank you for having me.
Sweet. All right. So, I love these types of conversations about frameworks, mental models, and the like, because you learn something new as you take these frameworks and apply them. One thing that was interesting in the prep for the show that Arnold von Gennep wrote this three-part, three-phase process, almost 100 years ago, and yet modern psychologists really haven't changed that much. They really just only enhanced the literature on top of that. So he has a really good mental model in which we can think and apply why do rites of passage do what they do? How do they do it? And what's similar about them? And so that we can create better experiences in the future. And so again, if we haven't explicitly said it, these are all things that as you prepare to be leaders in your lodge, for example, think about how you can create these three phases of the actual Masonic initiation process to enhance the initiation, the initiatic process, and just really make sure that we're really pushing forward the spirit of what we came here to do. So, come back next week and we'll get to part two, which is the liminal rites or transition rites. So we'll see you there next week. Thank you all very much for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.